Prefit barrels, single stage versus progressive presses, and 308 AR barrels this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and we are going to start off with some questions from our Patreon subscribers. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us on Patreon, and if you want to know more about Patreon, please check the link down below and find out how you can support the content that you know and love. Our first Patreon question comes from Robert, and Robert asks, pre-fit aftermarket barrels versus buying a blank and going to a more common gunsmith. Pros and cons of both in your opinion. Thanks for all you do. Well, we've got a pre-fit barrel sitting here in front of us, and this one is from Northland Shooter Supply. They were kind enough to send this over, and this is a Remage barrel. The blank is a Criterion blank, and it is turned to spec for a Remington 700. We do have a barrel nut on here that is threaded for the Remington 700 thread pitch, and this barrel is pre-chambered for 6.5 Creedmoor and does have a threaded muzzle. So we can take this barrel and screw it directly into a Remington 700 receiver, and we do have a lug that is ground precision to the face of the receiver and to the axis of the bore, and so we should be able to throw this together and with a go or no-go gauge, screw this in, tighten it down, and with just some hand tools and an action vise or an action wrench, we'll be able to re-barrel a Remington 700 receiver. So the pros and cons of it really break down to being able to rapidly re-barrel a rifle with a barrel that you have already bought and requires no extra machine work. So you can go to Northland's website. You can order up exactly what you want as far as barrel specs. They will turn it for you and ship it to you. So theoretically, if you have a Remington 700 that is getting long in the tooth, that barrel's got quite a bit of rounds downrange through it, then you can go ahead and buy a pre-fit Remage style barrel, have it made, have it shipped to you, and still shoot your rifle while the barrel is being machined and while it's being shipped to you. When the barrel shows up with a minimum amount of hand tools and a bench vise, you can swap that barrel onto your receiver and then be back out to the range again very quickly. So it takes almost no time at all to rebarrel your rifle and get back out and shoot. The cons are it does take extra equipment. We've got one of Northland Shooting Supply's action wrenches here that is designed specifically to be able to work with their taper lock system and the Remington 700. I believe this wrench also works with the Savage actions, but we don't actually have any Savage Model 10 actions in here to try it out on. You will also need some type of wrench for the barrel nut. Again, this is a piece from Northland Shooting Supply. You can reuse your barrel lug if you're going from a Remington 700 to a Remage barrel system, but we went ahead and got one of their precision ground lugs. That way everything works well and it works with their system to hold the lug in place as we tighten the barrel in. So that con is it does require some extra tools, but those tools will help you down the road if you decide to rebarrel with another Remage barrel. So it's something that once you spend the money on, which it's still a minimal cost compared to what you're going to pay a gunsmith, going forward, it's quick and easy for you to swap things out. Now, when we compare the Northland Shooting Supply Remage barrel system and the taper lock lug and all the tools, it still comes in less than what you're normally going to end up paying a gunsmith for a barrel blank and to have them install it on the action. Now, of course, we are not talking about any action truing. We're talking about just installing this on a standard action. Most gunsmiths that I know, most rifle builders, when they install a new barrel on a factory action that has never been touched before since it left Remington, they will go ahead and do things like true up the face of the action, They will go ahead and true up the bolt lugs. Some will even go so far as to lap the bolt lugs. That way, everything is true to the axis of the bore. With this system, you don't get that. So whatever Remington cut the face of the action to, that's what it is. Now, there are tools out there. Manson Precision has a truing set, an action truing set that you can get that does not require a lathe, that you can do with some hand tools. I don't know how well that actually works, but that is an option if you want to do a total no gunsmith deal and you want to true your action as well. When you switch over and you talk about getting a rifle rebarreled by a competent rifle builder, precision rifle gunsmith, then obviously the pros are the rifle is going to shoot very, very well. It's going to be very accurate, and you have an experienced person to act as a final check to make sure that what you're trying to do will all work together, that the twist for the cartridge that you're trying to put together will work correctly, and that you are properly headspaced and you're not going to have any issues with the rifle when it's assembled. One of the critical parts of doing a Remage barrel swap is making sure that you do set the headspace correctly, because if the barrel is not screwed in far enough and you have really sloppy headspace, you can have case head separations and all kinds of other things that could be a potentially dangerous situation. So you make sure you understand how to use headspace gauges and how to set that headspace when you're putting everything together. It is really not that difficult, but it is a consideration. If you don't feel comfortable with that kind of stuff, then it's best to go with the gunsmith. Very often, too, when you are working with a precision rifle smith, aside from truing the action, there are other services they can provide, Cerakoting, all that kind of stuff, to give you a more finished rifle when you're done. They very often will be able to bundle services together for a lower price point. So that's really the huge benefit. When you boil it all down, what I see, the big benefit of the Remage system is that you can have multiple barrels on the bench ready to go. When you burn a barrel out, you can swap it over very quickly. It takes a minimum of hand tools, and you're not working on a gunsmith's timeline. Sometimes there is quite a bit of wait to get a rifle rebarreled and trued and get it back to you. With the gunsmith option, very often you will get a higher quality, more accurate finished product. And again, you have that experienced hand to final check everything and make sure it's good to go. So really, I don't think you're going to go wrong either way. It's just what you are willing to go with and what your final outcome is. I'm really excited because we've got this set up here. We're going to give the Remage barrel system a try, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how accurate it is on the Remington 700. Now, the ultimatum deadline, it is a pre-fit barrel system from Excalibur barrels that we have on that one, and it is a very accurate system. We'll be doing the final wrap-up on that very soon. So I'm kind of a believer that pre-fit barrels can be very, very accurate. So that's really the pros and cons of both of those, and I hope it answers your question. Our next question is from Lewis, and he asks, I think it's Luis, I'm sorry. He asked, John, due to some circumstances, I have to take up on reloading, and buying match factory ammo in bulk will no longer be a feasible option for me. My question is, would you and the audience recommend I start making precision hand loads with a single stage press, or is a progressive press a better option? I only shoot about 100 rounds per month, but that can change. My concern with progressive presses have been its accuracy when loading ammunition, since some steps are automated, and I seek match grade standards suitable for tactical precision shooting, not bench rest. Thank you. Well, I have seen guys reloading on progressive presses like the Dillon 550, and there are some other ones out there, but I still prefer to load my match ammo on a single stage press. When you batch prepare brass and you do steps in batches, it's really not that big of a deal, because unlike reloading for blasting 223 ammo or 9mm or 45 competition ammo, you are generally going to weigh and hand drop each charge. You're not going to rely on a powder bar or a volumetric measure of powder. So you're going to want to weigh each charge weight and dump each charge weight. So there you're losing a little time. Very often you are going to need to trim, chamfer, and deburr brass. There are some automated steps for that, but generally that ends up being on separate equipment, not on the press itself. So that's a different step as well. So precision rifle reloading really lends itself well to the single stage presses. And if you prepare your brass ahead of time and all you're doing is priming, charging, and then seating a bullet, then a single stage press becomes very quick. So what I will generally do is I will tumble brass when I'm done firing it. So I'll take my fired brass, throw it into the tumbler, I'll run it for half an hour, I'll come out, and when I'm ready to resize, I'll lube that brass, I will run it through either a full-length sizer, or if I am neck sizing only, I don't bother with lubing, I'll run the brass through, decap it, and resize it in one step. I will do any cleaning of the primer pocket that may be necessary depending upon how many times I've used the brass. I may have to uniform the primer pockets if they're first firing. And then I'll seat my primers. Then I will switch over. And once I have 100 at a time, or possibly 200 if I'm loading for a two-day match, then I will set those aside. I'll get my powder into the powder dispenser. I will run the twin charge masters that I have sitting behind me. And then I will dump powder from the charge masters into a check scale, then dump it into the case, then seat my bullet, and then go on to the next one. So there are little tweaks to that that you can do that work better with your specific system, but it ends up being a pretty quick process to where I am seating bullets and moving the case off as quickly as I can dump powder in. So really with a single stage press, it's not that big of a deal. Now again, if you are loading blasting ammo where load or checking that powder charge down to the tenth of a grain is not that big of a deal, then a progressive press is just fine. But I have yet to find somebody who has loaded for precision rifle long range competition on a progressive that has been 100% happy with it. So I definitely would suggest going with the single stage. Now there are a ton of single stage presses out there from the Lee Classic Cast that we generally use all the way up to a Forster Coax press, which that actually is a very nice single stage press, and that's probably what I am going to upgrade to in the not too distant future. But there are all sorts of presses in between, the Rock Chuckers, all this, that will give you a very concentric, very precise match ammunition. But I definitely would stay with the single stage. So if you're trying to save some money, the Lee Classic Cast is a really good idea. I haven't had great luck with their cheaper alloy presses. I've broken linkages on one in the past. The Classic Cast has been our workhorse here. So definitely check into that. And again, we will leave a link below to links for everything that we discuss in this video. So make sure you click through to our website and check those out there. Our next question comes from Winters. And Winters asks, "Hi John, for factory competition ammo load, with similar accuracy and for shooting long range, what would you choose? Slower, heavier bullet with higher BC, or faster, lighter bullet with lower BC?" This is a question that we get a lot, and the problem is there are too many variables for me to actually say one versus the other. What you really need to do is you need to pick the two ends that you're working with. The heavier, high BC bullet and the lighter low BC bullet. You need to pick the appropriate powders for each, because very often they will be two different powders for each of those. And you need to load a ladder with each side. Now, this can be a simplified ladder where you are only loading one cartridge and loading it fairly coarsely, because what we just want to do is find the pressure limit of each one of those cases or each one of those combinations. shoot through your ladder and find where the pressure limit is on both sides. Then you need to come back and you need to put those into a ballistic calculator with the velocity that you got at that pressure limit, and then take a look and see which one is going to have the better wind characteristics, which one is going to cheat the wind better. And whichever one cheats the wind better, that would be my selection on which one to go with, because we really don't care about big and heavy versus small and light. What we care about is which one bucks the wind better. That will be the better competition load, because we have a pretty finite control over elevation. Range is not generally where people miss on the elevation. They generally miss left to right on the wind call. So whichever one has the better wind characteristics will give you a larger margin of error when you're shooting competition with the two. So there's really not a good answer, because you may have one on paper that looks better than the other one, but you may not be able to get to as high a pressure with that one, with that powder and with that load, than you can with the other one. So there's really no right or wrong answer. You really need to find out where your velocity is, and then again, you need to check what the wind drift is going to be with that velocity at a pre-specified range. And then that would be the one that I choose based off of that. Now, I'm not going to lie, I cheat. I look what the top running guys are running, and that's usually what I go with, because I really don't have the time and I don't have the money to just buy a ton of different bullets and a ton of different powders and go out to the range and just spend all day doing load workups. So I tend to hone in on what a popular powder and a popular bullet is for the cartridge that I'm looking at, and then I will do some workups with that. Now, I am going to start doing some a little bit different load workup for the 6.5 Creedmoor, because it is a very popular cartridge right now, and I've gotten some tips from some other guys that I want to see if they pan out. So I've got some different styles of burger bullets. I've got some 123 Lapua Sinars, and I'm going to go through and see how those work, how those will perform at pressure limits. Now, I don't ever advocate actually loading your match ammunition to pressure limit, but that pressure limit allows you to get there real quick, find out where that's at. You've already fired the cartridge at that max pressure, so you already have the velocity data for it, so now you can switch over and see what the performance is. Ideally, if you want to do this in the best way possible, you would do a full load workup for either one, find out where your highest accuracy node is for each one, and then compare the wind drift characteristics of the accuracy node on each one. However, I'm trying to find a little bit more of a shortcut to do it. Shortcuts are not always the best, but those are two different ways that you can try that out. So you're really going to need to grab a box of bullets, grab the appropriate powder, load up a ladder, and then take them out and see where they end up. Our next question comes off of Facebook, and it comes from Leon. And Leon asks, I want a 308 gas gun. Should I buy an Armalite AR-10 or build a 308 to save money? I don't want to go low budget, such as the Palmetto State PA-10, but I don't want to break the bank because I also would like to have quality glass on top. Well, Leon, I agree on you not shooting for the absolute bottom right away, but glass is a consideration. If you spend all your money on the rifle and you don't have the money for glass, then you're going to have problems later on. The issue that I see with the semi-automatic rifles is to get shooting, you're going to have to buy something. So if you go with the Armalite and you still have money left for some good glass, I think you're probably going to be good to go. The Armalite rifles, depending upon exactly what configuration you get, they come in around $2,000. Now, if we look at the other end of the spectrum, those PSA rifles, they come in about between 700 and 800 for one of the PSA large frame semi-automatics. I have not shot those yet, so I don't know what the quality is on them, but that price point really causes me to have a little bit of caution going into that. I would expect that a barrel and a bolt may need to be replaced to be able to get peak accuracy out of the system. The trigger group is probably going to be just acceptable. There are some guys, I just read through some quick comments and some quick reviews from owners on them. There are a lot of guys that seem to be satisfied with them, but I don't know what their accuracy requirements are. If they are truly getting sub MOA or if those are cherry-picked groups like we talked about previously. So if you can go with the Armalite, I would suggest going with the Armalite if you still have money left over for glass. Now, when we talk about building your own gun, very often when you go with the building, you don't actually save any money. The advantage is you can get exactly what you want and you don't have to replace parts anymore. So when you buy a factory rifle, you'll probably find parts on that factory rifle that are not exactly what you want, and over time you'll replace them. So you've already paid for them and then you pay for parts to replace those. Unless you can recover a good amount of the value, it's just lost money. So in that case, building is better than buying, and it will save you money in the long run. But if you are actually just looking at saving overall, very often building a rifle will cost you more because you end up buying higher quality components, and you may not get the economy of scale that you get when you buy a factory rifle. The factories can generally get parts for less depending upon what their profit margin is. Then that kind of can sometimes even out in the mix. I like building my own rifle, or in the case of an AR, really it's assembling. There's not really any machining. You're not making anything out of any raw components, but you're assembling parts to configure the rifle the way you want. I prefer to do that because I have a really good handle on what components are going to work together, what I like and what I don't like, and sometimes I like to try different components and have the ability to swap them out later on. For me, I feel like I have a little bit more invested in the system when I put it together myself. But when you put it together, you're also going to have to factor in tools that you need to assemble it. You're going to want to be able to have some kind of bench vise to be able to hold the upper receiver when you put the barrel on. You'll have to have tools to attach the handguard because most free float handguards require their own tools. You will probably need a headspace gauge unless you're purchasing a barrel from somewhere like Fulton Armory where they can headspace it ahead of time, check the barrel and bolt at the same time before they send it to you. So those are things to keep in mind when you're factoring it all together. But I agree with you, I wouldn't go with the bottom. I would really look at if Armalite has a configuration that you really like and you don't think you're going to change anything out, I would jump on that. JP Rifles also has a rifle configurator system on their website, so you can go through and you can build out exactly what you want. Now, JP Rifles is a little bit higher tier manufacturer. You will pay a little bit more for that customized rifle system. But again, if you don't have to swap out parts later on, that may be worth it for you. So check those options out. And again, we'll leave links down below, or we'll leave a link to the links down below because we can't post links direct to firearms retailers or firearms manufacturers. Our next question comes from Tim, and Tim asks for a 308 AR build, 24-inch Criterion barrel or 20-inch Krieger. Both barrels have the same contour, only difference is length, and rifle is used only for target practice. Love the show and all the info. Well, Tim, I did a little bit of checking on different prices, and if we are looking at a Criterion from Fulton Armory, you're looking about $296.96 for a 20-inch match barrel. If we're looking at Krieger, and I tried to build out the barrel a pretty similar configuration, from Krieger, you're looking at $685. And because I don't believe Krieger has in-stock barrels, and I don't know if you're looking at a retailer that has in-stock Krieger barrels, you're probably going to have a little bit of a wait for the Krieger. So you're looking at, you know, $400 approximately more for the Krieger barrel. Now, there's really no question that the Krieger is going to be a higher quality match barrel than the Criterion, although we have gotten very, very good results with Criterion barrels. The Criterion that is on our 6.5 Creedmoor Mach 10 build is a very accurate barrel, so I don't really have any qualms about those. We haven't used their 308 barrels, but I can assume their quality is going to be similar to the bore finish with the 308 and the 6.5 Creedmoor. Again, this prefit, that's going on a Remington 700 is a Criterion blank. It's actually a Criterion barrel that is chambered by them for Northland Shooting Supply. So guys have gotten great, great accuracy out of these barrels as well. So I don't think you are going to be in a bad place going with the Criterion barrel. I believe that the Krieger barrel may have a hair more accuracy and a little bit higher quality, higher fit and finish than the Criterion barrel. And it's because the barrels are manufactured in two totally different ways. I believe Kriegers are single point cut. The Criterion barrels are, I believe, button rifled. It's a little bit different process. It leaves a little bit different stresses in the materials, and people have been arguing about single point versus button for ages. Both can be very accurate, but in this case, Krieger, I believe, definitely holds more shooting titles and more wins than the Criterion barrels. But again, you're paying for the difference. Now to throw another one in with you, Proof has been doing a lot of AR barrels right now. We've had good results with Proof carbon wrapped barrels, and the Proof Research barrels about $827. I believe we found that one or that price on Rainier Arms, but they're all over the place on the web if you search for those. So that is another option, especially if you want to lose a little weight, because 308 ARs, large frame ARs, tend to be a pretty heavy system overall. But again, to answer your question, I wouldn't have any problems going with the Criterion barrel. I think it's going to be a fairly accurate system. But if you're one of those guys that is capable of shooting quarter inch groups, you're capable of stacking those cartridges in there, and that's your accuracy requirement, then it may be worth the extra money and worth the extra time to go with the Krieger barrel. And our final question today comes from Timothy, and Timothy asks, 2018 budget rifle build, please. And Timothy may have seen some of the stuff that we were hinting at on Instagram and on Facebook, but we are getting ready to kick off the Budget Precision 2018 build. I think that's what we're going to call it. Budget Precision 2 doesn't really have the same kind of ring to it. But this will likely be our last Remington 700-based rifle build. The Remington 700 system has really... The pattern is a good idea, but the quality of the rifles actually coming from Remington have dropped significantly. So this time around, with the Budget Precision project, we decided not even to start with an actual rifle. We instead decided to start with a Bear Remington 700 action. We picked this one up with the trigger and with the bolt. You can also get them with just the bare receiver and then purchase a bolt from companies like PTG, but you're going to be significantly higher in price. This guy was significantly cheaper than any of the custom or aftermarket actions that are available. Obviously, it is stainless steel. So we decided to give it one last try, and the heart of the system is actually the barrel, and we are going to utilize the Northland Shooter Supply Remage barrel system with their taper lock barrel lug and their tools to put it together. Now, I have a really good idea of what stock or chassis system we're going to use for the build, but I can't give you guys all the information right now. I want you to actually tune into the series and watch it as it goes along. We haven't decided how we're going to break this up into a bunch of different series, or if we're just going to kind of lump it all together in one video, but that is coming very, very soon. I've got all the parts in here, so it's just a matter of getting the time to film the assembly and kind of get that arranged with the other videos that we have to wrap up, like the Ultimatum Deadline build. YouTube kind of threw a little bit of a wrench in things because we are not supposed to show how to manufacture a firearm. My opinion is building this thing out into a match rifle is not manufacturing a firearm. At least the ATF doesn't believe it's manufacturing a firearm. This is the firearm. This has already been manufactured. It is already the controlled item. It already requires a background check in order to purchase. All that fun stuff. Depending upon what your state laws are, it may require a much more in-depth check. But this is the federally controlled item. It is the serialized item. I am not manufacturing this. It's not like we're building an 80% into an actual firearm. This is already a firearm. So hopefully YouTube will see it that way and we won't end up getting another community strike and getting our video yanked. But we're going to do the best we can for you guys. So we're going to show that together. But that's one of the reasons the deadline video has taken me so long. We shot the videos putting it together. I just have to figure out how to assemble that and how to edit it so that it complies with YouTube's community guidelines. Now, obviously, over on Full 30, that's not going to be a problem. They're not going to yank it. But I really want to try to keep this both on YouTube and Full 30. Our Full 30 audience is growing. I thank you guys for subscribing to us on Full 30. But obviously, our YouTube is still currently our core audience, and we want to keep content rolling out for our core audience. So that's kind of the state of that. So we do have the Budget Precision 2018 build coming. It is based on a Remington, and we will get that rolling out. Now, if you guys want to see a different build going forward, maybe a Budget Precision 2019 build, then please leave a comment down below on what system you want to see it on, be it a Tika, a Savage, or something else out there. Drop a comment down below. Now, one last thing before we go, I'm going to give you guys an update on the SIG P320 evaluation and specifically the Romeo 1. So at this point, we have killed our first battery in the Romeo 1. And you'll notice if you look at this, this Romeo 1 looks a little bit bulkier. And that is because it does have the SIG Optics shroud on it. This is a steel kind of a cage. It's a loop that covers the outside of the aluminum body of the Romeo 1 and just gives us a little bit of extra durability. We have been beating on it. We've been racking the slide off of the optic. We are getting close to being able to do our full evaluation, but I wanted to give you guys a real quick overview of how it's been going so far. I really have grown to like this system. I didn't think I was going to, but I gave it an honest run. This has been my main range training gun for the last couple of months. I still have to run the Glock at the end of the training day to make sure that I'm tuned up on it, since that is what I carry on the street. But for just banging steel, working on the fundamentals and that, the P320 has been great for us. Now, we did kill the battery in the optic today. It is the P320, the Romeo 1 takes a 1632 button cell battery, not the regular 2032s that we have in our rifle scopes and in various other optics. So unfortunately, I didn't have one of these in my range bag. Now, interestingly enough, in my steel challenge gear, in the actual pistol case that I keep my Ruger 22 that I shoot steel challenge with, I have these guys because the Vortex optics that we have, one of the two of them runs the 1632 cells. But in my regular pistol training bag, I didn't have one of these batteries. So I ran part of the training day with the red dot. We actually ran it to totally dead, totally not visible, and then ran the rest of the training day with the iron sights, mainly because I wanted to see if the co-witnessed iron sights on this thing were really usable. The front sight is partially obscured through the optic when you're running it, but there is an actual groove in the optic body that allows you to see the front sight and engage the targets. So it actually worked. When I drew it on the last death knell of the battery and noticed I had no dot, I just dropped to the irons and finished out the drill and then ran the rest of the drills with irons only, and it worked fine. The thing that concerns me, though, is this handgun. We took delivery of it about, I believe it was July 13th. Took delivery of July 13th, put the battery in it. It was going since then. It has the MOTAC system in it, the motion-activated system, so you don't actually turn the optic off. It just goes dormant when it sits for a while. And as soon as it detects motion, picking it up, the dot comes back on to the previously set intensity. You would think that that would allow this guy to have a pretty long runtime on the battery. But what I found is not carrying it every day, with most of the time with it just sitting in the safe, pulling it out, you know, every day or two, just doing some different drills with it and then putting it back in the safe. The battery has not lasted that long. This is September 3rd that we are shooting this on. So July 13th to September 3rd, you know, we're looking at less than 2 months of battery life out of the 1632. Now, to be honest, that was the battery that came with the optic. I don't know what the state of the battery was before we put it in. I don't know if it was a lower cost battery unit. I can't remember what brand it is. I don't have it sitting pulled out here. That was a lack of forethought on my part. But we are going to go ahead and replace it with a Duracell lithium battery. And I will mark down the date on this guy and we will shoot through it. And we'll see if we get more than 2 months out of this replacement battery. But I have heard other Romeo One users complain about battery life with the initial battery. I have not heard a lot that have come back and followed up with battery life with a secondary battery. We got considerably more battery life out of the Trijicon RMR than we have out of the Romeo One. And my RMR is on all the time. It is the RMO1, so it is automatic brightness adjustment, and it just stays on constantly. It doesn't shut off at any point. So I got a lot more time with that one. Now, both the Vortex optics that I have, the Razor and the Venom, those both get turned off in between use, so I can't really gauge battery life based on those. I've had fairly good battery life so far with the Leupold Delta Point. That one has lasted much longer than the battery in here. And again, the Delta Point also has a motion activated system. So when it sits, it turns off on its own. As soon as you touch it or move it, it comes back on. So we'll get this battery swapped in. We have a few more drills with the Romeo One. I've got some plus P ammo that I'm going to run through it. We're going to bash around just a little bit more. And then we'll come back to you guys and we will report with the overall durability and my overall opinion of this. I know a lot of guys will reference the Sage Dynamics review of the Romeo One. That was not with the Shroud. At this point, I consider the Shroud really mandatory on these type of optics for any kind of duty or hard use. It fits in my concealment holster just fine. We should have a Safariland duty holster coming in soon that is designed for the P320 RX. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about that when we do the wrap up. But that is where we're at right now with the SIG P320 RX. If you guys out there are shooting the Romeo One on any platform, I'd love to hear your comments on it. How's it working for you so far? So drop a comment down below so we all can see it. That's about it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have questions or comments over anything we've covered, please leave it in the comments section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. Again, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. If you guys want to learn more about how you can support us through Patreon, we will leave a link down below. We just got a shipment of our patches in from Combat Swag. Those will be going out to our Patreon supporters at the $5 point and above. And then we're going to take the balance of those and we're going to put them on our website for sale. So if you guys want to pick up a patch, check out the link down below to our web store on our website, and hopefully we will get those out there soon. And until next time, get out and shoot.